June 23rd, 76 at the AES meeting in Haverford. Well, can you tell me a little bit about your educational background and how you got involved in radio work in general?
Well, I like to start recollections like this with my birthday, September 21st, 1913, in Regina, Saskatchewan. It happened to be a Sunday.
Yeah.
And I looked through my father's diary, and I wish I could recall correctly what he said, but it goes something like this: may you always see the light.
I see.
And my family, I guess I have an unusual background. It's only recently I've been able to probe. My father was one of those Englishmen who came from London in 1882, when there was no railroad. And as a boy, I can recall him telling me Regina being a pile of bones.
Mm-hmm.
And he grew up there and as a contractor and made many of the buildings. And my grandfather came out a year later. He was a blacksmith, and at that time the Indians were in turmoil, and he was employed to shoe the horses of the RCMP.
Hmm.
Well, this seems rather roundabout way of getting into the beginnings. Because of the shortage of women in there, he married late in life, so there was a tremendous age difference between my father and mother.
I see, I see.
But one thing my mother told me when I was quite young — my father died when I was young, as a matter of fact — my father was interested in astronomy and belonged to some astronomical society.
Uh-huh.
This happened to be the Regina Center of the Royal Astronomical Society of Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only about a couple of years ago that I discovered that he was one of the charter members of this group.
Hmm.
It never survived, and in Regina there's now an independent amateur astronomical society.
Hmm. Did he teach you any astronomy as a boy?
In the sense that he would read me these mythological stories, you know. So my introduction, I guess, to astronomy was more via the classical myths.
Yeah, and constellations and so on, yeah.
But there are many details of that part of my life. Then the family moved to Vancouver, British Columbia,
mm-hmm.
and, other parts of British Columbia. And there's another scene which I've often tried to date. We had relatives in Victoria, B.C., and as you know, the 72-inch telescope of the
right.
Astrophysical Observatory is there. As a small boy, I visited it with my aunt and uncle and
mm-hmm.
family. And on the way up, I guess I became a very noisy little boy and I disturbed other ones. And my uncle spoke to me quite severely, you know, in certain terms, and put me in place.
Hmm.
And this story is often repeated in the family. But I can recall visiting the observatory and seeing the two clocks there and the huge dome. I must have been 7 or 8, asking my father what the two clocks were for, and he mentioned the two kinds of time,
mm-hmm. yeah.
sidereal time and ordinary time.
Yeah. Now, what about your college education? Was that where you first got interested in radio, or were you
No, since my father died quite young, I think I was age 13, I wanted to go out and help support the family, and so mm-hmm. I started working in a cabinet factory for about 3 years after I'd been about 6 months in high school.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then, after 3 years in the cabinet factory, I became aware of amateur radio.
Mm-hmm.
And so I built, in 1930, I had an amateur station operating,
mm-hmm.
210 oscillator. At this time, it's rather strange to recall that the rectifier to supply the DC to the plates was derived from a lead slop jar.
Oh, amazing.
Another thing I did, radio inspectors wouldn't like it now. I read about Marconi, you know, and spark transmitters. Got hold of an old spark coil and put it directly to an antenna.
Oh, wow.
But for 2 years, it was a lot of fun. You know? I made about 30 contacts from Vancouver, well, right across Cedar Rapids. And I just have a few of those QSL cards.
Yeah.
Left now. Most of them have vanished.
Right. But there weren't too many amateurs then.
I met a few these radio amateurs. Well, there were half a dozen, as I recall.
In Vancouver.
Vancouver.
Yeah, yeah. So 30 would get you to quite a radius, though, before you picked up that many people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so you had this interest in radio. Did you follow this up in your college education? Or?
Well, that was a question of always earning a living. I became conscious of commercial operators, so I spent 2 years getting my commercial tickets.
Oh, I see.
And there were, this would take me to 33, 35. And then in my spare time, I got my matriculation for university. I began to realize that one needed a technical information. I was curious, too.
Yeah.
Get involved in all these things.
But it was the middle of the Depression, too. You had to keep on working. You couldn't just go to college.
That's right.
Right. And so you went to which university then?
It was the University of British Columbia.
Mm-hmm.
Working on, during the summers, as wireless operator and assistant purser on the Canadian National Steamship Company. In the summer, they had trade. Tourist trips from Vancouver, Prince Rupert, Skagway, back again.
About a
two-week run.
Hmm.
And, that way I earned, I guess it was about $120 a month. Clear, of course,
yeah.
The board was on the ship.
Right.
Well, then I got a B.A. in physics in 1938, maths and physics. I've always interested in mathematics, and so it was a combined maths mm-hmm. and physics. But while going to university, I accidentally met an amateur astronomer, and at some time or other, it must have been age 16 or 17, I grabbed myself a 5-inch mirror, mm-hmm. making use of porthole glass.
I see.
Again, I came into contact with a group of amateur astronomers. And they were awfully helpful. I admit the figure on the mirror is not perfect,
right.
But still good enough to see many of the heavenly sights.
Right. But you say also as an undergraduate you met some amateur astronomers.
Well, I guess I'm getting somewhat confused in my recollections
yeah.
here. Well, my interest in amateur astronomy carried through as an undergraduate.
Yeah.
I remember taking my mirrors to the university and setting them up in the basement,
mm-hmm.
trying the Foucault tests.
Yeah, yeah.
In fact, I still have some of the photographs of the Foucault shadows.
I see. So beside this early interest in radio, you also had the very early interest in astronomy. So
amateur astronomy, yes.
Yeah. So
I'm 38, Jane. Oh, then I guess people were quite conscious of the rise of the Nazi movement, 38.
Mm-hmm.
39, I think, war was
That's
declared
right.
in Canada.
Right. And what sort of a job did you take when you finished your degree?
We had a lab assistant. I went on for an MA degree in physics alone, and to support myself and learn, of course, I became a lab assistant.
Mm-hmm.
And the thesis work was on electron microscope. At the University of UBC, through G.M. Schrum, developed, and the graduate students who had gone before me, had developed quite a reputation at the University of California.
Hmm.
And there's a University of Lafayette, University of Indiana.
Or Purdue.
Purdue.
You mean?
Purdue, right. I mean, yes. And so after the MA, I had hopes of going either to Purdue or Berkeley.
Mm-hmm.
It turned out to be Berkeley in 1940.
I see, and to go on for a PhD.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that was quite an exciting era, as you probably realize in hindsight.
Yeah. Now, who are you working with there in Berkeley?
They happened to receive an RCA electron microscope just about when I had arrived, and having produced a thesis on a simple electron microscope, I was willing to sort of put it into operation. But then the atomic energy development occurred, and all these things got shoved into the background, and ultimately I became one of the assistants in the radiation lab.
Oh, I see.
For 1 year, I was a teaching assistant. A teaching assistant from 40 to 41, and then in the radiation lab from 41 to 42. Well, again, that's another whole story.
And what sort of things were you working on?
I guess tuning the cyclotron. The Crocker Radiation Lab, the Crocker